It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 412. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. We're going to kick off the show with two voicemails that are short and great. And you can leave me a voicemail. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. Don't forget the wiki, and that's at mtswiki.com. And there you'll find links to all of the archive shows. I have a jam-packed show tonight. Like I said, two voicemails, a stack of email, but they're short. I'll be able to get through all of them fairly quickly because the last email I'm going to spend half the show on. And that's basically networking 101, the basics of the cabling and networking and network infrastructure. And great question that was asked a few weeks ago that I'm finally going to get to and spend some time answering. So before we get started, summer's coming. It's here. Today's the first day of summer, and boy, am I feeling it's hot. And that means many of us will be spending more time working from home or while traveling. So getting everyone together for a meeting, it's almost an impossible task. If you're not sure how to do it, you got to try GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. GoToMeeting lets you host meetings with clients and colleagues face-to-face, all while online, no matter where you are. And with HD Faces, you just need a webcam to turn your online meetings into a group HD video conference. Attendees can join from any computer, any device. Also, my listeners can try GoToMeeting with HD Faces free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and enter the promo code PODCAST. Then download the free app. Now, there's one more thing that you really want to take advantage of this. GoToMeeting is giving away 8 new iPads on Facebook. All you have to do is visit Facebook and like the GoToMeeting page. Then you can enter to win. And get this, if you recommend someone and they win an iPad, so do you. So if you refer a friend and they win an iPad, you also get one. So check it out. Like GoToMeeting on Facebook, and you could end up using it on your new iPad. I'm going to take this moment. Next week, we will be welcoming another sponsor added to the show and looking forward to a long-time relationship with them. And I'm very excited, so you definitely want to check out next week when I discuss an incredible product that I am very proud to represent and put on the show because I've been using it and I'm using it with my clients. So very excited about that. To kick things off, let's start with the voicemail messages.
Hi, Mike. Kevin with the Computer Doctor here in Richmond, Virginia. Just giving you a quick call in reference to show 410 where you were talking about getting files to and from an iPad from a local computer and back and forth. And you mentioned an app that you're using, and I'm just curious why Dropbox wasn't an option. That certainly can get it to and from the iPad and the local desktops, and then you don't even have to worry about running the web server application. So just a thought. That's how I've done it for quite some time with all my mobile devices for obviously confidential information. So if it's confidential, then of course that adds a whole different level of complexity. I also wanted to share a quick story from the trenches with you. I was just called out earlier today to a new client, never done any work for them. They're running a server 2003 enterprise box that is hosting their QuickBooks data, and that's about it. They also have it set up to RDP in through static IP, external IP, from devices and, you know, other locations to access the server to run their QuickBooks software. They apparently got a rogue SMTP server infection on there. And when I got out there, was taking a look around, got it cleaned up. Not a huge deal. I'm going to work on the blacklist a little bit later. But when I asked them, what is your password, guess what the password is. It is password. And the user name, of course, is a very easy guessable, you know, normal person's name. So it's kind of one of those things where their previous IT support is, you know, I just want to go over to them and kick them straight in the head and say, what were you thinking? Of course they're left open and exposed, and of course they're going to get compromised. You know, just, again, one of those stories from the trenches where the users, they should know better, they don't, but the previous IT support, they need to be kicked square in the head. So, anyways, thanks as always. Good night.
Great voicemail. Thank you. And you're dead on. The Dropbox is a great way to transfer files from any of your portable devices and your system. You can have the Dropbox client on your iPhone or iPad. Obviously, your Dropbox client on your system, you can just drag files. It'll sync right to the Dropbox cloud location, and then you can access them from your device. But the file's not on the device, and there's a lot. Yes, to transfer things, I like GoodReader, but there's other advantages in being able to view files and some file management capability that you also get with that app, and it's very inexpensive. But you're right. Dropbox is a great alternative to be, and it was right there, and I can't believe I didn't talk about that, and getting files to your iPad, which is what the topic was that I ran into with some clients, and that's why I was talking about GoodReader, which I've recommended and showed people how to use. Well, your story from the trenches, which I love, and please continue to share them with me. I love hearing them. How often do we walk into a client, we're trying to help them, and we fix things up, and we see, I see this all the time on new clients, just horrible, horrible selection of passwords. Then I've got the extreme where I had a client where the password was so complicated, it was like, oh my God, it was like horrible just trying to even remember it to be able to type it was near impossible. So I either get one extreme or the other where it's too easy, too simple, or overly complex. I'd rather the overly complex because at least you know they're secure. Well, having an easy to break password, or worse than that, not changing the default password. If you have a firewall or router and it's protecting you, please, please, please change the default password, because anybody can Google the model of your of what the firewall is, or the router, or the access point. You can find the default login and password. Make sure that you advise your clients or yourself, you're sitting there, or if someone's helping you, maybe you hired an IT person and they're setting things up. You know, speak up and say, did you change that default password? And what is it, please? Make sure any technology device that you get that's going to be facing the public, that you've changed the default password. It doesn't hurt to even change ones that are still in your house to protect yourself. Great comments. Thank you. Here is the next voicemail.
Hey, Mike, it's Brandon Carter, B. Carter. Used to be in the chat quite a bit. It's been a crazy couple of years. Having kids and working, just want to say hi. Still a faithful listener here in central Massachusetts, formerly of Buffalo, New York. Anyway, I just want to drop a line and let you know some software I used many moons ago, probably like 2005, that removes duplicate emails. It was called Sperry. It's S-P-E-R-R-Y, Duplicate Email Remover. I just did a quick Google search. Looks like they're still producing it. It worked like a charm. back in the day. I don't know if it's going to help you out now, but it looks like it could still do the job. It literally goes and deletes the duplicate emails, but I don't remember the exact steps. You may want to check out their website. That's Sperry Software, S-P-E-R-R-Y. I'm assuming other people may have mentioned it or not. Not sure. But anyway, that's what I used, and it was good. So have a good one. Enjoy the show. Keep it up. Thanks.
Hey, it's great to hear from you, and thanks for sending the voicemail and the recommendation. Yes, Sperry, and I've heard of that a long time ago, too. So that's on the list for duplicate email. I will have a link in the show notes to their utility, and I haven't tried it, and I am going to be testing that. I'm also, this is a great segue into the emails. We have email here in show 411. You asked about duplicate email remover. I have used Mappy Labs duplicate email remover. It works. $24 for a single user license. Reasonably fast. It got through a 1.4 gig PST file with 12,000 emails, finding 2,200 duplicates in a couple minutes. Thank you very, very much for that recommendation. I'll have that link. Yitz from Israel and Michael G sent me the same recommendation, and it's ODIR, Outlook Duplicate Items Remover. And this is one, when I looked at it, I remembered using this in the past, and I couldn't remember the name. It's free, and this is what I sent my client, and he's actually afraid to try it. I'm going to try it for him. I sent him the link to this to help with pare down all the duplicates. I went to try that utility, but it doesn't work with the 64-bit version of Office 2010. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of things that don't work with the 64-bit version, which brings me to, I'm redoing my system tomorrow. It's absolutely this weekend. As busy as a weekend I have, I'm completely redoing my system. I'm putting an SSD drive for the main drive, and I am installing the 32-bit version of Office, not the 64-bit version, because I'm tired of having add-ins and things I want to play with and try, and they don't work. What is it? I thought people would be jumping on 64, you know, everything 64-bit. Let's get the 64-bit version of Office. And there's like nobody. I mean, Microsoft's not even really pushing it. So I have to go with the flow with the way everybody else is using Office and the utilities, and I have to adapt. I know when Office 2010 first came out, I couldn't wait to put the 64-bit version on my system. I'm going back to the 32-bit version as I redo my computer so I can test with these things. I actually have another system that I set up with XP, and I can test it virtually because I have, you know, XP running in VirtualBox, and I have Windows 7 running virtually. So the only thing is I'm not using Outlook in those scenarios. So I'm going to set up Outlook and set up a PST. What I'm going to do is actually try to test some of these utilities. The main thing, though, before you try anything like this, make sure Outlook is not running and get a clean copy of your PST file. So before you run any utility that's going to do something drastic like finding duplicate messages, make sure your PST files are backed up. They are, you got them copied. Outlook wasn't running when you copied them. And now go ahead, try it. Because if something goes wrong, you know you got a safety copy. Thank you so much for everybody in recommending, and I will report back on the results. But I'm really encouraged by ODIR, and that's the one that I'm going to try. Next would be the Sperry program, and then we'll take it from there. Have an Outlook question here. This is from John, and he says, I have been a longtime listener of the podcast. Love the show. Your show is one of the few hands-on recommendation to manage and repair computers and network systems. Other podcasts talk about the politics of technology. That being said, I have a problem with Outlook 2011 for Mac. I recently installed Microsoft Office 2011 14.2.2 update. This is the latest update. The previous is 14.1 and had some issues. After installing 14.2.2, I continually receive the following error. The server for account Gmail returned the error alert, too many simultaneous connections, failure. Your username, password, or security settings may be incorrect. Try re-entering your password. It's interesting. I'm wondering, is it trying too fast to try to connect? When you get that message, usually it's because the password's wrong and you need to get that correct. To solve this problem, I spent most of the weekend doing a complete uninstall of Office 2011 and ended up installing OS X Lion from a cloud restore. Finally, I reloaded an old image using Time Machine. This solved the problem, but I still had the old version of Office 2011 that had security issues. Being a glutton for punishment, a few weeks later, I installed the Office 14.2.2 update. I got the same error message, just less often. An online search suggested I delete my email account in Outlook and create a new email account. Creating a new account is not a problem. I use IMAP. I have done this several times, but I still have the same error pop up. My computer is an 11-inch Mac Air with the 1.4 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo, 2 gigs of RAM, and 120 meg SSD running Mac OS X version 10.7.4. Have you encountered this error? No, I haven't, but I got to admit, I just updated it after reading this. I have since updated to the latest version of Office on all my iMacs, but I'm not using Outlook for the Mac. I use Outlook for Windows. And I am going to give it a try it using IMAP as a connection to one of my Gmail accounts. And I'm going to see what happens. And maybe there's a bug or something with this particular update from Microsoft. Finally, I took your advice from Tech Vets. I have registered the domain. He has the domain here. Not sure what I'm going to do with it, but I'm looking forward to Carrie's video. I've been using... And he has his name as a login at various places around the web, but that domain was taken. A plug for Tech Vets here, which is another podcast that I do. We just released show 80 last night. Carrie Holzman is putting together and editing a beautiful video on how to go through getting your own domain and setting up Google Apps and your own email for that domain and how to do it from stem to stern, from just the beginning to everything you would possibly need. Keep an eye out for that video, and I will be linking it both from the Mike Tech Show website and Tech Vets, which is at tech-vets.com. Back to John's question. John, I am, like I said, I'm going to set up Outlook on literally my MacBook Pro that's like right behind me, and I am going to try IMAP and see if I get that error or not. You may need to troll around the Office forums on Microsoft and put that out there. Again, if you have seen this error and know of a fix, please let us know and I will let John know right away. Maybe there needs to be another fix or another patch from Microsoft. Keep an eye out for that. And John, I'll get back to you. This is from Clark PC, who's in the chat, and he says, Mike, when I went online to pay my Comcast bill, I saw a button for high-speed internet data usage. I clicked to get the following information and graph of my monthly data usage. It was good to know how much data I was using. Viewing your show properly accounts for 50%, and the other 50% was Facebook. I actually have no idea, but those are the two activities I do the most. Plus a little bit of window shopping on Amazon via the Mike Tech Show link, of course. Thank you very much. I was surprised that Comcast has a cap. Oh, no. We've talked about this a while ago on the Mike Tech Show, and it's something everybody should be aware of. I did not know that. Maybe your listeners have checked theirs. Does Verizon have the same limits? No, they do not. We're talking internet limits. For my broadband, for Fios, there's no cap. Comcast absolutely has a cap. And if you use Comcast, you do a lot of downloading, go check your results and go see, because there'll be a dashed line at the cap and you could see where your bars are at and are you hitting the cap, because you got to be careful because they'll cut you off. Clark, as I was looking at your data usage, it's significantly small. That is very, very small. You're not even scratching the surface on usage. You don't have anything to worry about hitting the cap based on your usage and your pattern of using the internet. I wonder how many others out there, though, are, you know, if you're doing a lot of downloading, a lot of downloading big movies and big files, you know, you're going to hit that cap. Keep an eye on it and log on to Comcast. But right now, I am very lucky with my Fios. There is no cap. But that's good advice for everybody to keep an eye on that. Clark, thank you very much. This is a follow-up from the listener who wrote in about his Ubuntu and audio problem. He says, thanks for reading my post with Ubuntu 12.04 sound problems in VirtualBox. Compliments the Ubuntu forums. I had to change my audio in VirtualBox to ICHAC97. That worked. Required a reinstall of Ubuntu since there's no way to change settings once an OS is installed. Ubuntu 12.04 is solid and works great. Unity horrors have been fixed. Yay! Thanks for a great show, and especially you and Carrie on Tech Vets. This is John in Dallas. John, thanks for following up with that. This is the question I'm going to spend a lot of time on. Network installation best practices. This is from Neil. And he says, I was catching up on a few shows during a long drive today, and I was taken by the passion in your comments about the unnamed person who was planning some network rollout and not following best practices, maybe in show 407 or 408. Network installation is something I really should know more about, and I wondered if you could recommend some sources of the right way things should be done. I realize you probably learned this stuff years ago, and some of it may have been just picked up while you were working. Actually, a lot of it was. There has to be good reference work somewhere. Thinking mainly about the things you really think make a difference in making a reliable network rather than a rat's nest of Cat5e and domestic routers and switches, which too many small businesses seem to have. Thanks so much for your podcast, both MTS and Tech Vets. They are the best. Regards, Neil. You nailed it right on the head. The network problems that I see the most are small businesses that need a way to expand their network or extend the network, and they add hubs. And they add another Cat5 cable to another hub, a hub to a hub, and a hub in the ceiling. From a best practices standpoint, and I know everybody cannot do this, or maybe because the facility doesn't lend itself, maybe it's just budget reasons, but the best way for a network to have its highest performance is to have a home run Cat6 connection. And yes, I'm saying Cat6 because the prices are the same. If you're going to buy cable, might as well buy Cat6e as opposed to Cat5e. Cat5e will work, but Cat6 is certified for faster connections, which we're heading to. You may not be at it this moment. You don't know where that change and when it's going to happen that you're going to need it. Great example. Fios is now 300 meg I can get. Well, if I have a 100 meg switch, my bottleneck is going to be the switch. I got to have a gigabit switch or a gigabit hub, because if I only have 100 meg, I'm leaving all that speed on the table. I'm not going to use it. If I have 300 meg coming from Fios, how's 100 meg going to help me? This is why to plan and future-proof your network, you run the Cat6 if you're running new cable, and you want to make sure that all of the cables are going to a central point. And one of the mistakes that I see all the time is someone getting cable that was meant to run in walls, and they're putting a connector, a network connection at the end of it. That's wrong. That's not the way that cable was supposed to be set up. The way to do it is your cables should be running to a patch panel. Now, a patch panel is a panel where you can punch down each of the wires to each of the ports on the patch panel. Then you use a patch cable to patch the port to the switch. At the other end, you terminate either in the wall, in a wall jack, with a proper connection for the wall jack, or if you can't get in the wall, then come down outside the wall and get a surface mount jack and connect in there. This is where you want to make sure everything is the same. If it's Cat 6, then you make sure that you're buying Cat 6 wiring, Cat 6 patch panel, Cat 6 connectors for the plates and the jacks for your wall plates. Then buy Cat 6 patch cables to be the distance from where you want, let's say, your desktop from the wall jack. If it's 10 or 15 foot, then buy a 15 foot or 20 foot Cat 6 cable. For a switch, when you got your patch panel, then you want to patch now to a switch. And buying anything that does not do gigabit is a waste of money. It's a complete waste. Get a gigabit switch that can handle as many ports that you need to patch. So let's say you're in a small office and there's 10 cubes or 10 connections. Then you buy a 12-port patch panel. They sell them in increments of 12. You would go to monoprice.com, which is the best place and the least expensive to buy everything that I'm talking about. The punch-down tools that you can use to punch these connections, the patch panels, any of the jacks or plates, any color that you would want, and your patch cables, any size. I do not make cables. I don't recommend cables. And I cringe when I see someone making cables. Cables are too cheap. There's no need to make cables anymore. The slightest thing can go wrong and you can have a problem. Why make it when you can have a certified cable that's made for you that has been tested and is reliable and you buy it? And if it's so cheap, because please do not tell me it's cheaper to make a cable, because I guarantee you I'll beat you every day with the prices from Monoprice versus you taking the time to measure out the cable and make them. You don't need to do it anymore. You buy the size that you need. The only time that you need to, if you're going to run cable through the wall, obviously you buy a big spool. And you can get them at 1,000 feet. And those 1,000 feet, I think they cost like $100. It's well worth it. I got two spools here. Anytime I need to run a wire, I actually get a friend of mine who does this for a living, and he'll run the wire. I've ran wire to where my sons play their Xbox in the basement. I've ran one to the living room. Run a direct connection. And here's what I'll do in the house. I'll go surface mount jack to surface mount jack and still use two patch cables at the end. That is the proper way. If you don't want to be struggling and trying to figure out where the problem is and what happened and what went wrong, do it right. Punch it to a jack, to a wall jack, to a patch panel. In bigger office environments, let's say you have 100 people, then you need multiple 48-port patch panels. And you would put them in a rack, and you would still do the same thing. Only now you would have multiple switches that you would patch them to. So a great example is, let's say, this 10 to 12 office, or even up to 24. Let's say 24 seats in an office. You would get a 24-port patch panel that you can put in a portable rack. You can actually buy racks that are like 4U or 6U high, or you could buy a self-standing rack, but you can buy racks from Monoprice that you can mount to a wall. In this rack, you would put the patch panel. All racks are 19 inches wide. That is the common width. So that's why you see rack mount switches and rack mount equipment. They're all 19 inches. Or they have adapters to make it rack mountable that will make it 19 inches. And they usually come with the rack mounting plates. The best switch in the world that I recommend is the HP ProCurve. It's 24-port gig switch, and it's a real switch, which means you have to give it an IP address, and you can program it. You can have virtual LANs. Now, if you just want a good switch and you don't care about all that programming, well, you can still just give it an IP address and just let it sit and don't use some of the advanced options. But it's quiet. It's cool. It will. And when I say cool, meaning it won't run hot. There's no noisy fans. And it just flat out works. And that is the switch. And I'm going to put it, it's the 1810G-24. And I'll make sure I'll have the link in the show notes. And I've put that in there a lot. And a lot of you have purchased it because it's a great gig switch. If you want just a simple, just unintelligent switch, not a smart switch, Netgear has a very inexpensive, it's under $200, a 24-port gig switch where you just plug it in and let it go and just plug everything in. What you want to do is have all of these cables terminate where your internet is coming in. So if there's a networking closet or a networking room, or you need to designate an area that's going to be the network room, make sure it has ventilation. And that is where you might have a server or two. You might have your managed or unmanaged switch, your rack. And then with your rack, you will have the patch panel. And now you need patch cables that go from the patch panel to the switch. Now, if the switch is mounted very close to the patch panel, you can buy 1-foot Cat 6 cables that will neatly connect the patch panel to the switch. This is the way to do it. This is the proper way to set up and configure a network infrastructure. And when it's not done that way, that's where I get upset. And that's when I know there's going to be problems. And I try to counsel my clients or anybody else that is in with listening range of my voice to do it the right way. That is the right way to set up a network. In summary, use Monoprice for all the equipment. Make sure you punch to a patch panel. Make sure you're patching from the patch panel to a gigabit switch. And then at the other end, where the desktops are located, make sure you're punching down to a wall jack or a surface mount jack, and then run a patch cable from that jack to the equipment. That is the proper way for a network. If it has to be Cat5e, great, that'll work. And gigabit, yes, will work over there. But if you're buying new, make it all Cat 6 and you don't have to worry. That is networking 101 from an infrastructure view, according to Mike Smith. Will you find that in a book? I don't know, because that's from experience. That's from working with experienced cablers and electricians who are in the business. That's working with people that design networks and design data centers. Remember, I have experience in building several data centers from scratch. So I've learned from the best of the best in order to build out a data center, a high-performance, state-of-the-art data center that I've built, and I've done it right. Those data centers cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to build. I'm taking the same principles and bringing it to very inexpensive networks for you at home in small offices. This equipment, when you go to monoprice.com, it does not add up to a lot. And you should practice. If you're looking to get into this area, buy the punch down tool and practice punching down to a surface mount. Buy a small section of the cable, and you can test setting this up. But this is how it should be done. And then when you're done, you got to tone out and test it. That's why it really should be done by a cable professional. And they should sign off on each port by testing and toning. And I have these tools for myself that you put a tone generator at one end and then another device that's measuring it at the other. And what you're doing is you're measuring, and it will tell you whether there's a fault in the cable going back and forth. Any cable professional who does cabling and who has done network infrastructure and cabling, they should be following these practices. And if they don't, then I challenge their experience and what they've been doing. And I don't care who they are. I don't care what they say. This is an area where I'm right. I have the experience. I've been living this and doing it for 30 years. Take my advice. That is the way to approach and set up a network from the infrastructure point of view. If you can't find the equipment at monoprice.com, then I know you can find it at Amazon. And if you're buying anything from Amazon, use my link, please. It's amazon.micnation.net. Or it's miketechshow.com/Amazon. Go to my website, miketechshow.com. You'll see the Amazon link on your left-hand side. And I want to thank everybody. We're not even finished the month of June. And the listeners who have been using my link have exceeded any previous month for the last 6 years that I've been using Amazon as a link. You've exceeded it already this month in June, and I thank you so much, because when you make a purchase, there's a small percentage of that is a commission back to the Mike Tech Show that helps support the show, and that is the best way you can show your support, and also by visiting my sponsors and checking their products out. That helps me, and thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed the show. That's it for tonight. And I will talk to you same time, same channel next week. Please stop by next week and for my big announcement. It's exciting and can't wait to see you there. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.